Welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hello and welcome to AHDB's Food and Farming podcast. I'm Katie Evans, AHDB's National Specialist for Grass, Forage and Soil. I would like to welcome Dr. Katrin Houston from Agri-Food and Bioscience Institute. Today, we're going to be talking about GrassCheck GB projects and how the industry can benefit from being involved in this piece of work. So welcome to the podcast, Katrin. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you're involved in the GrassCheck GB project?
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me to join you today. So I've always had an interest in livestock, and I've worked as a researcher in livestock sciences since I finished studying back in 2016. But actually being involved in GrassCheck GB has been really nice for me. I'm working with grazing stock with some of my other roles. I spent a bit more time in the abattoirs. So I've been involved in GrassCheck GB since I took up a role at AFBI, which is the Agri-Food and Bioscience Institute based in Northern Ireland, just a little after the project started in 2019. So I've been involved for 4 years now, and I'm mostly the sort of person on the ground doing the data handling in the project.
Brilliant. Thanks, Cass. So you mentioned the project started up in 2019, and I suppose just to give our listeners an overview, the project is run by CL and AFBI and also Rothamsted Research as well. With support then from the likes of ourselves at AHDB, HCC, so the Meat Promotion Wales, and QMS, so Policy Meat Scotland. And then there's further sponsorship from industry partners. Could you give us an overview of what the project involves, who's involved, and how you see it benefiting the industry?
So this is a really nice sort of industry-wide collaborative project. It's really nice to be working with partners like yourselves, with the levy boards, and with the commercial companies that we have involved as well. They've been really great support. This project is working with a really broad network of farmers, which are contributing data to GrassCheck GB. So we've got farms represented from the north of Scotland down to Cornwall, and there's a real mix of farming systems represented with variable levels of intensity within the farms in terms of their intensity of inputs, the farming landscapes that they're in. And at the moment, we have 20 dairy and 30 beef and sheep farms involved in the project. I think the key similarity across all of the farms involved is their approach to grazing management. So everybody operates a rotational grazing system, and they pay close attention to their grassland management and their forage quality because they're all working really hard to maximise their production from grazing.
Brilliant. It's great to sort of get a background on where the farms sit, how they were kind of approached by the project. And I suppose that they're not just livestock farmers, but they're grassland farmers. And that's a key part to this project, isn't it? And key to their system. Could you give us an update or an overview of what's measured on the farm, what kind of data is captured, and how you use it?
So we're actually collecting an awful lot of data from the farms involved. The first key aim with that data is to try and get a handle on the actual levels of grassland production across the country and the variability in that that we see on farms that have well-managed grazing systems. So with the 50 farms involved in the project, they plate meter their paddocks every week and they record grazing events with their pre and post-grazing residuals. And we're capturing all of that data coming in. The farmers also submit samples from paddocks every fortnight, and they're on an alternating basis, so we're getting data every week. They're sampling the paddock that they're next due to be grazing, so we should be getting a snapshot of the nutritional quality of the forage that they're actually feeding to their livestock as they go around the rotation. And we're also able to tie this in with sort of the monitoring of animal performance in terms of milk yield and live weight gain on farms where this kind of monitoring is routine as well. And then on each of the farms, we have got a weather station installed, which is quite a nice bit of kit to have, although less pleasant last year when you're looking at the rainfall saying zero for so many months at a time. And the data from that is really crucial to the project. So they are recording the usual values like temperature and rainfall, but they also record soil energy, and we've got stations on them that record soil temperature and soil moisture. So that data feeds into some of our modelling work, which I think we'll talk about in a minute, but it's also allowing us to begin to improve our understanding of how the variability that we see in grass growth links in with the different weather conditions that we see through the season.
Excellent. I suppose really valuable information there for the farmers as well to see what's happening, how this data correlates into grass quality that they're receiving back, and I suppose animal performance. So you mentioned that each contributor has a weather station installed. So can you tell us now a little bit about how you use that data captured and how that ties in with the modelling? Can you also go through how this can benefit the farmer, but also the industry, knowing these values, knowing these measurements? How do farmers use them to support their day-to-day decision making?
So thinking about benefits to the industry and linking in GrassCheck GB, I think there's a couple of different angles on that part of the question. So there's benefits to individual farmers, but also at the wider industry scale. I think in terms of providing a broad data set and potentially informing policy in the future as well with the data that we're collecting. For me, one of the key benefits sort of in terms of both of these aspects is really highlighting the returns that we get on good grazing management. So I know there's a lot of effort involved on the part of the farmers involved in the project. They work hard with the plate metering and the sampling, recording their stock data, but then the yields that we see coming in from the data on their farms, the grass quality too, they're well above industry average figures. And that's even over the past couple of years where we've had far from average growing conditions. So the data set in terms of the farm monitoring data is quite a robust and it's a reasonably unique data set. And I think it's complementary, of course, to the Forage for Knowledge data set that is collected by AHDB. And I think combined, these data can be used to really highlight the impact of the increasingly extreme and unpredictable weather patterns we've had over the past couple of years in terms of how they're impacting grassland production and therefore livestock farmers across the country, and hopefully try to encourage some investment in understanding and mitigating or adapting to the impacts that climate change is going to have, sort of looking into the future for the industry. Then we have the other aspect, which is the regular outputs that we have from the project. So we put out bulletins every week containing information on grass quality and grass growth in each region. So if you haven't got your own data to hand, you can look and see average values in the bulletins along with average soil metrics. The latest data from the nearest GrassCheck GB farm to you and live weather data and live soil conditions is also available through our website. So that's the kind of figures you can look at potentially if you want to see soil temperature at the start of the season and see where it's sitting in areas close to you. And using that kind of data can hopefully help you in planning your own short-term grassland management decisions. But if we combine this data and looking at trends in recent historic grass growth, but also the modelling work that we do within the project, our bulletins contain 7 and 14 day grass growth forecasts. And the aim with those, and I think the real value in those, is hopefully helping the industry to be more proactive and more confident in their decision making. So whether that is looking at the forecasts and deciding that you're comfortable to set paddocks aside for silage because growth rates are expected to keep increasing and you're already looking at surplus, or actually, and I think last year was unfortunately a great example of this, whether you look at them and you hold off on cutting your silage and actually you need to implement plans to reduce your grazing demand because there's a shortfall in grass coming up and there's no expectation for growth rates to increase, and particularly as the drought continued on through last summer.
I think there you really summarised that this is a tool that's really valuable for farmers for risk management, and it's a tool that can aid in that decision making and something that can support them when out in field trying to make that decision, should I go or should I not? This is a place where they can come back and refer to give themselves that bit of confidence, which is vital and something that we all need, because whatever decision you make there and then has to be the right decision.
I mean, in terms of how the model works, it's not foolproof. It's not perfect. And partly that's because the weather forecasts that we use to feed into it can sometimes be quite different from the weather that we actually get. But the way this model works is it's been developed from one that's been running with our sister project GrassCheck. The model itself was developed in Northern Ireland back in 2005, and these predictions have been running for plot sites in Northern Ireland ever since then. So our challenge in GrassCheck GB was to adapt this model to work at a regional scale and with the slightly different conditions that we see across GB. I think ultimately we'd really like to have it working on a narrower scale, but there are certain challenges in getting good enough data to be doing that at the moment. So the data that comes in from the farms, we use the data from their weather stations, the daily data that we get, and we combine that with some set values in the model for soil type, grazing management in terms of defoliation intervals and fertiliser applications. And then there's a whole set of equations in the model that relate to grass physiology and how it responds to soil moisture balance and that kind of feature. And then the model spits out, when you put all that data in, it spits out weekly average grass growth rates. So we take the weather forecast data for the next 16 days that we can get on a daily average, put that into the model, and that gives us predicted grass growth for 7 and 14 days. So I think, although it's not perfect, grasslands are a very complex system to be trying to model, and we can't match all of these parameters exactly. What we've seen over the past 4 years with the data we've collected and the testing that we've done, so I think we can be quite confident that the model does follow the trends that we then see in grass growth on farms. And it should be a useful tool, as you said, to indicate short-term expectations for grass growth, even if the figures are going to be slightly different depending on what's going on in your system.
You mentioned last year and the weather that we experienced and the challenging grass growth season that we had there from May onwards. We had that slight delay in spring, but all in all, 2022, it began well, and we had above average grass growth across the country from late March to May. But from June onwards, we obviously had that restriction then in rainfall and the very high temperatures. And this did result in limited grass growth across the country. Could you kind of give us a summary of last year's results? Like, what were we looking at for the average yield on farms? What did that look like for our beef farmers and our beef and sheep farmers and our dairy farms?
So just an average over the past 4 years, across all of the farms, we've seen an average yield of 9.5 ton, but it is being dragged down slightly by the figures from 2022. Generally, we tend to see higher yields on dairy farms than beef and sheep farms, although this isn't exclusive. There's variation between farms, and we've got some very high yielding beef and sheep farms involved in the project as well. But in terms of an average per group, last year dairy farms recorded 10.3 tonne of dry matter per hectare across the March to October window, and beef and sheep farms were averaging 7.4 tonne.
Wow. So I suppose, considering the difficult growing season, we actually saw some impressive utilization rates with that. And can you tell us a little bit about how that varies as well on the dairy and the beef and sheep farms, and how they compare against each other? But I suppose as well, it's looking at how this relates to their target post-grazing residues and how that has a role to play in maximizing the grazed grass in their system. I'm after throwing a lot at you there now, but really, I suppose it's just understanding how this all ties in together and really pushing that utilization, and how impressive it was last year considering the season that we had.
I think we've seen excellent utilization rates from the farms involved in this project sort of throughout the past 4 years, and last year was no exception. Utilization is a little bit of a tricky one, because it does mean the most when you're looking at your own grazing residual targets and your own system. How we calculate it within the project, just so that we can compare between farms, is we set a target post-grazing residual for assessing utilization of 1,500 kilograms of dry matter per hectare. And that's a residual that we'd say is ideal for grass and for grass regrowth. So with that assumed post-grazing target, last year we had average utilization rates across the project of 78%. And actually, there's very little difference in utilisation between dairy and the beef and sheep farms at 79 and 73% respectively. I think when you're looking at utilisation on an individual farm scale, the target post-grazing residual might be a bit different, and you might even change it for different stock groups that you've got going around the paddock. So, for example, with high yielding dairy cows, we would typically recommend that your targets are a little bit higher, maybe 1,600, 1,700, even 1,800. And that's because the effort involved for the animal in grazing that little bit tighter and having a greater proportion of stem in their intake as they graze closer, you can actually see that impact on yields and on animal productivity. Whereas if you're a sheep farmer, your sheep will easily graze to residuals of around 1,200 or even lower. And actually, I think last year, the challenge in terms of utilization was making sure that that didn't happen and pulling stock out, even though there was such a shortage of grass. It's making sure your residuals don't go too low, so you leave enough leaf material behind so that when conditions improve, there's material there that can start to photosynthesize and kickstart regrowth really quickly. In terms of making the most of grass, what you don't want to see is too high of a residual left behind. So that's not just because that's representing forage that you haven't utilized, but also because it's going to negatively impact on grass quality in your next rotation. So the proportion of stem and dead material is going to be higher as you come round again, and the nutritional value of the sod will be lower. So utilisation is really key to maintaining quality as well.
And it's what you said there. We've heard it so many times, grass grows grass. And really, it is about keeping that solar panel there when we're looking at those residuals. Last year, we had a lot of questions on how drought and how the different how weather and extreme weathers, how that affects the quality of the grass. And looking at the parameters, what were you seeing back? How is it affecting the likes of ME, proteins, dry matters? Can you kind of give an overview on what you saw?
So drought stress certainly had an impact on quality last year. We've seen really good averages in terms of sort of a whole season metabolizable energy values for grass across the history of the project. But last year there was a little bit of a dip, and the figure for the whole year was an ME of 11. That's still actually really good quality forage across the season. And that's certainly higher than average figures that would be available for grasslands. So it's showing that management is important. But what we did see when we graphed the data sort of from around the end of May time, when the dry weather really started to kick in, we saw a steady decline both in ME, in the sugar proportion of the grass actually, and in the protein. And I think the decline in the sugars is just representing the moisture stress and the fact that although we had lots of sunshine, the grass wasn't able to photosynthesize because it was under such physiological stress with the moisture deficit. But consequently, and not surprisingly, dry matter was increasing corresponding to these. And we saw that trend right through until August. It wasn't really until September that we saw grass quality start to pick up again.
And we saw grass quality, grass growth continue into September, October, even November. We still had farmers out grazing. And it's great to see that when soil conditions can support us. We're now into mid-April, springtime. It really is the time to review things, and it's time to reflect back on things that happened last year. Where do you see that room to improve, whether for farmers that are involved in the project, but also farmers externally? And where do you see those easy wins, but also what are those limiting factors that we should be focusing on to drive performance from grass?
There's always room for improvement, I think, in almost every system. And getting the basics right, I know everyone's heard it before, but it's not as easy as it sounds, and it's so important. So things like reviewing your soil testing, addressing soil pH and your nutrient profiles, if you need to, are essential to allowing grass to perform at its best on your farm. It's also surprising sort of the negative impact things like a few docks in the field. It might sound like a few docks, but they can really impact on the yields that you're going to be getting. So assessing your swards, looking at figures from last year, perhaps, and this is feedback that we've had from a couple of farmers that are involved in the project, that it's been really worthwhile for them to put numbers on the performance for all of their paddocks across the grazing platform, and looking at the difference between the best and the worst gives them a starting point to say, well, why isn't this paddock doing as well as this one? Sometimes there's a reason, and you know that paddock is particularly stony or gets particularly dry, but other times there would be quite comparable swards. And if they're not comparable in terms of their productivity, you need to start going and doing some troubleshooting. Another thing I think to be checking, and you can maybe rope your local seed rep into this to give you a hand, looking at the proportion of productive grasses, or if you've got a multi-species sward, the other species that you've sown in your sward. And if they're declining, consider either reseeding or certainly stitching in some of the more productive varieties that can boost production. In terms of looking for improvement in your animal performance, it's that thing again about looking at grass quality throughout the season and making sure that you're allocating grass to match intake needs as well. And that's going to allow animals to make the most from grass. It's really essential to be monitoring not only your swards and your grassland, but your stock as well, so that you're recording average daily gain regularly, or you're looking at your milk yields. And if your grass quality is high and your animal performance isn't what you'd expect it to be, that gives you an opportunity to go and look for any other sort of confounding issues that would be holding your stock back, the same as you would for your paddocks.
So I suppose there it's back to the foundations. And for us, that's back to the soil, looking at making sure those indices are at the right target level, looking at your pHs, And again, these are all things that have been covered, but it is about going back, grounding ourselves, so to say, and working from the bottom up. Fantastic. I suppose, like I mentioned, we're now mid-April. Farmers are moving into their second rotations. I know from our Forage for Knowledge, I see it on the grass check as well. How is growth and quality? How has it been this spring compared to other years?
So last week and this week, the start of April growth is about on par for us in terms of our four-year average. But what we've seen is certainly a slower start to the year. And I've seen a much bigger variation than I probably normally see in terms of growth rates between the farms involved and the average farm covers as well. And I think that's reflecting sort of actually the quite contrasting challenging conditions we've had this spring compared to last summer, in that we've had an exceptionally wet March, a really wet week just gone in April too. So there are people coming into second rotation, but there are some that are struggling even to have soil conditions to turn out into still. Hopefully, I think everybody's managing to at least get someone off grazing, and we're just looking forward to the sunshine coming and improving things. In terms of quality, again, it's been a little bit behind average the start of this year. Again, I think as a consequence of people not being able to get out as early as they normally would have done. So we've still got some carryover deferred grass coming through in our samples, whereas we would expect to be more into second rotation by now.
And we are seeing people are out measuring, people are submitting samples for quality analysis. How important is grass in those systems? And I know one of the things you've started looking at and part of the bulletin is putting a value on our grass. How's that calculated out by yourselves, Kat?
So the value of grass feature is something we've added to the bulletin this year. And it's really just to try and give people an indication of, based on the average values that we're collecting as a project, what level of productivity should they be expecting, all things being equal, with their grazing system from the livestock that they have out. So we've got two features that we're publishing. So we've got a Dairy Maintenance Plus, which is the kilograms of milk production per cow per day that you'd be expecting purely from grazed grass. And then we've got a figure for growing animals, and we're basing that on a 300 kilo beef steer and looking at a daily live weight gain in terms of kilograms per head per day. So the way this is calculated is we've got assumptions for maintenance requirements, energy required either for milk or for daily gain, and then an estimated dry matter intake for each of these stock classes. And with dairy, we've based it on a spring calving cow because DMI will change significantly through the year, both in response to the lactation curve and pregnancy. Whereas with the growing stock, we've assigned an average DMI of 2.2% of body weight, which is from the research about where we'd expect figures to be. The figures that then come out of that, so this week we were looking at 20.6 as an M plus value for the dairy cows, and just over a kilo of average daily gain for the growing stock figures.
So farmers at this time of year, how do they get the most from it? Is it all down to management and measurement? Is it together? Is this, where would you see, is there, again, going back to those quick wins for those farmers, how do they get the most from their grassland?
Management and measurement are really big factors, and there's some really good evidence, work that's been done at AFB and Rothamsted and elsewhere, to show the positive impact utilising data can have on overall productivity. It's not just a case of you'd be growing that much grass if you weren't measuring it, because if you're measuring it and you're making little changes all of the time and you're thinking about your management system, all of those things contribute, and we really do see higher yields when we've got a measure-to-manage approach in grazing systems. So thinking about overall productivity and how farmers get the most from grass, it's also about balancing the whole system and working with your system and your stock. So making sure that you have productive swards that meet the demands of your system, balancing your inputs. So there is no point pushing for maximum grass production if you don't have the stock to graze it. So there's a balance there as well. And also making sure that we've got healthy and efficient animals that are grazing and utilising the swards to the best of their ability, as much as we're focusing on producing the best grass that we can.
So another aspect of GrassCheck GB is looking at some of those research studies. And this year, we're looking at three on-farm research studies. Can you give us a study outline of each of these and what knowledge gaps they'll help fill?
So it's really nice to be working with some of the farmers on some sort of on-farm projects this year. The first study is going to be looking at assessing the value of clover on commercial farms within rotational grazing systems, because we know it's really well established that clover can be a valuable component of grazing swards, particularly for the biological nitrogen fixation. And I think that's something that people have been quite focused on, given what's happened over the past 12 months or so. But despite knowing this, the vast majority of seed mixtures that are sold are still grass-only compositions. And what isn't so well understood in practice is how best to manage clover in these rotational systems in terms of grazing residuals and defoliation intervals, and the impact that its inclusion can have on animal performance and forage quality. So we've got a couple of farms that have got both a new grass clover lay put in and a grass only lay put in that were established at the end of last year. And we're going to be looking at comparing both sward performance of the clover under a reduced fertiliser input relative to the grass sward, but also looking at animal performance at grazing on these two sward types to see how do the management strategies that the farmers have in place and how do the swards perform. Can we sort of identify and maybe put a value on the benefit of including clover? The second is aimed more at beef and sheep finishing systems, and it will be focusing on evaluating the impact of different rotational grazing strategies on animal performance and grass utilisation. So I've been asked a few times during the course of this project why we get such a noticeable difference between growth rates and yields on dairy farms versus beef and sheep farms. And it's not going to be the whole answer, but part of the hypothesis for this is that that is partly down to the grazing management, because dairy herds would tend to be moving much more frequently compared to beef and sheep herds and flocks. So in this study, we're going to compare performance of growing animals either on four-day moves, which seems to be more typical of the beef and sheep systems that are involved in the project at the moment, or on one-day moves, which is more representative of what many of our dairy farmers are doing, as well as monitoring sward performance. So we will hopefully see if there's any difference in animal performance being moved more frequently, and if there's any difference in the sward performance having stock taken off after a shorter time. And then the last project that we're going to be looking at is asking the question, can forage quality and yield be improved by using a targeted sulfur-only fertiliser on swards that are not receiving any combination nitrogen and sulfur products? It's clear there's a need and there's a desire within the industry to be reducing our nitrogen inputs where we can and improving the efficiency of utilising all of these inputs, particularly given prices. But since we've had sort of better air quality and a reduction in industrial emissions, we've actually seen a lot of UK soils are now sulphur deficient. And response to sulphur in terms of grass and crop production, it can actually be quite difficult to correlate purely with soil test results. So what we want to do within this project is apply a sulfur-only fertiliser product to swards and have a control sward that's not receiving this application and see if we do see that yield response throughout the season. And part of the sort of thinking behind this is that the fertiliser should hopefully boost production, and the delivery of sulfur in these sulfur-only fertilisers is readily bioavailable to the plant, because obviously there's plenty of sulfur in slurry and manure products as well, but that bioavailability can vary too. So it's just seeing, can we boost production?
Thanks, Kat. I suppose for farmers, for anybody that wants to find out more about these projects, they can get in touch with the likes of ourselves at AHDB or yourselves through the Grass Check project. But I imagine over the next year, there'll be a lot more information, results coming out from these projects, and we'll look forward to hearing them. A huge amount of data is captured, and you mentioned it yourself with this project. There's a huge amount of work, and that's down as well to the farmers or contributors, because they're providing the quality data, they're providing the grass measurement. How can farmers that are involved in the project, but also outside of the project, how do they access this data? How do they benefit from these results? Where can they go to find out some more information from the weekly bulletins, the websites, or where else?
So farmers involved in the project, we do try to give them quite regular feedback on sort of the data that they're all providing. But from outside of the project, so yeah, the weekly bulletins that were published, you can find those on our social media channels, so on Twitter and Facebook, and they get uploaded every Wednesday. They're also published in the Farmers Guardian every Thursday, so look out for it if you're sat down with the paper. The project has a website, which is grassstrikegb.co.uk, and on the homepage we've got an interactive map, so you can see where all of the Grassstrike GB farms are located. And if you click on each of the points on the map, you can see the latest figures that are coming from that farm in terms of their grass growth, the average farm cover, and their quality results. And then if you look into the weather tab, there's a live feed available from those weather stations in terms of sort of providing the most recent weather conditions and soil conditions. And then on the website as well, all of our annual reports are available, past bulletins are available, the latest bulletin will be uploaded, hopefully on a Wednesday morning as well, links to a few other resources.
Brilliant, Kat. I suppose we'd love to think that maybe throughout the season, maybe at the end of the season, we'll have another catch up and we'll see how things progress. Hopefully this season won't be as challenging as last year and we'll have lots of good news stories coming out of those additional research projects. I'd like to thank you so much for your time today. But if you would like to hear more information on anything discussed today, please do visit the GrassTrek GB website or the AHDB Grass website, where you'll be able to find more information, the tools available and resources. I'm Katie Evans and thank you for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org. UK.